It's good to be with you tonight. Chosen for our topic to look at tonight is based off of a verse from Psalm 139, verse 14, where that David said that we are fearfully and wonderfully made. And why I think that it's appropriate for us to examine this kind of concept about how we are made is because as we look at our world today, one of the major attacks that we will come across is the teaching of evolution. Schools are saturated with it. They are forced to teach it to our young people. TV shows bombard that as themes. And so I think that it's important for us to be able to have a firm assurance about God creating the things around us, this world that we live in. And we don't have time tonight to go into an exhaustive examination of evolution, but I do think that, at least to some extent, we need to be able to have a good answer. A good answer to people who question why we believe in creation. And so I want to do just a brief overview of what evolution teaches, and then I want to get into talking about the human body. And what I want us to see from our examination of the human body is evidences of design. Because when you see that these things cannot have happened by an accident, that they had to have been designed, well, then there must be a designer, a creator who fashioned these things to operate this way. And so that is what I hope for us to gain tonight. And hopefully, if there's nothing else that you gain, is just to stand in awe of what God has made, how He has made us. All right. Darwin published his theory back in 1859. That was long before genetics were understood and a long time before the electron microscope was invented. And I'll describe why I think those two particular things are so important. But Darwin described things like the simple cell. And again, I'm going to explain why I think that's important, but he said there is a simple cell. Well, it's not simple. When you examine it, it is a very complex thing, even down to those little small, tiny little cells. But at his time, he had a lot of observations about science. They weren't ignorant. But he looked at these things and he said it was plausible for a simple cell to develop into other things because he thought it was a basic thing. It was just a glob kind of thing. And he subscribed to concepts like natural selection as being a mechanism for evolution to take place, but he also subscribed to things like Lamarckism. And what this teaching shows us is how limited they understood genetics. And, for example, Lamarckism says if an animal stretches out its neck to eat from a tree, if its neck gets longer as it exerts that effort, then eventually that long neck will be passed on to its children. Well, that's not how it works. That's like saying somebody who lifts weights all their life and gets real big and muscular will have muscular big children. That's not how genetics work. But he subscribed to this as a possible mechanism for how evolution could operate. But again, as genetics were understood and as these things were learned more about, it was shown that these things could not be the mechanism. And so that's why natural selection is what you always hear about. It's because part of the theory was proven false, but the natural selection maintained and was adopted and modified whenever they did understand genetics a little bit better. But evolution basically teaches that life began from non-living matter by chance. And so man and everything, plants, animals, developed by chance mutations. And keep that in mind, it's just random chance mutations over eons and eons of time. I want you to imagine this taking place by thinking about a cardboard box, just a simple cardboard box. And that cardboard box changes into a house where that there are doors with locks and not just some ordinary door, but maybe a door where you have scanners, where you have to put your palm print on there or a retina scan. It's not going to let just anybody through that door. There is a complex network like that of entry and exit. The house has electricity, lights, climate control, has food processing, garbage removal. It is a modern house, but it started out as a cardboard box, something very simple. And just as time went by, it changed and grew into this house. And then don't just think of it as just an ordinary house, but you think about the Jetsons house where it was self-operating. If there was a problem, the place would take care of it, send a robot out, and it would take care of things. It'd bring you your meal and those kind of things. Think about if your house has a leak and the house just takes care of it. You don't have to worry about it. It is self-operating, self-functioning. It takes care of itself. Would anybody imagine looking at a cardboard box that one day it might change into something like that? Nobody would. But evolution says, well, just give it enough time and it could happen. Because non-living matter, a pile of chemicals, stones, it could change, given enough time and the right circumstances, into a living, functioning organism that has a lot of complexity to it. It's not just a simple life form. And so what science has learned since Darwin's time does not confirm evolution, but it denies it because it shows how complex life is. We've all heard about the Big Bang theory. And this is one of those things I think is a good example, because evolution is going to say, well, it started by the Big Bang. Well, how many explosions have you ever come across that anything good came about from it? There is this massive explosion and things are slung out. What does it do? It does not create order and function. It does not pave the way for these parts to be slung out and fall into place to form anything. Explosions are destructive. The illustration I've heard before and I like is a tornado going through a junkyard. There can be all the right parts in a junkyard to have a car. A tornado comes through and it scatters and throws those parts into the air. You do not expect a 57 Chevy or a 64 Cadillac to be showed up in that junkyard after the tornadoes come through. It's not going to happen. No matter how much time, no matter how many tornadoes come through, it just won't happen. But again, evolution is not presented this way to young people, to any of us, really. It is presented in very simple ways, articulate ways, and I think a lot of times people are impressed and intimidated by the language that's used by scientists. It sounds like they know what they're talking about. They've investigated this, they know it, they've proven it, and we're pressured to accept it, to adopt these things, and it causes some people to overthrow their faith because they start questioning whether God exists, whether there is a creator, and whether there is really a natural explanation for all these things around us. This is a picture of the red blood cells in our body. And I wanted to show you this example because this is what the electron microscope enabled man to see, these kind of details. Now, there's a scale on there of 10 micrometers. And what that scale is equal to is, if you look at a ruler and the smallest dashes on a ruler is a millimeter, you divide that smallest dash up into hundreds. This is 1/100th of a millimeter. That is how tiny we're talking about the electron microscope letting man peer down into and study and examine life. And red blood cells have a weird shape. They've got this little dimple right in the middle. And man starts saying, well, why is that? And they start looking into these things and asking questions about it. And why I put this up here is because as you look at these kind of complexities, these kind of questions that come up by the electron microscope letting us see these things, there's more complexity to life than it just being a simple thing. That simple cell that Darwin described, here's a picture of it from the electron microscope. There's these, you know, round shapes. There's these little lines. Well, what are those? Well, as man looks at the simple cell, what he finds is it's not simple. It is like a mini factory. And there's this production going on in this mini factory where that you've got energy being produced, waste being removed, materials being transported, reproduction. And those little structures have various functions. And it is amazing to think about it being just down in a little speck of a thing, and yet you find this complexity there. To say that the cell is simple is like looking at a truck and saying, that's a simple truck. Well, yeah, that truck may not have GPS and automatic windows or reverse camera or all the gadgets that we have today. But nobody would go up to a truck and pop the hood and look at the engine and say, ah, that's simple. You could say the engine describes it as, well, that's what makes the truck go. Well, yeah, that describes it, but you look at that thing, and I don't know of a lot of people that know how to work on engines. I mean, most people say, I'm just going to take it down to the mechanic because I don't know what the first thing about engines. It is a complex mechanism. It's not just simply, oh, it makes the car go. There's fuel, there's cooling systems, there's power sources, there's recharging of the power source, there's belts, pulleys, fluids, filters, valves. All of those things serve a purpose to achieve a function. They have an end goal. And what you do is if you take that engine apart and you look at the individual components, you will see that they were designed to fit and work well together, that they have intricate parts that cannot be just cast off. You can't just say, I don't need that valve and just throw it away. You don't look at an engine and just say, well, we don't need the radiator, the alternator, and just start picking parts and throw it away. They work together to serve, to accomplish the function and the purpose of that engine. And you had to have somebody design it to make it work that way. And so I think that's a good thing to keep in mind that, you know, again, if you have somebody trying to act like that life could have just, you know, happened over eons of time, think about these kind of examples of like an engine. You don't look at those things and just think those things just happened to take place. They were designed because of the complexity of how the intricate parts work together. Back to what David said in Psalm 139:14. He said that, I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works, and my soul knows it very well. David did not have access to a microscope. I don't think that man has to have those kind of things to appreciate and look at creation and see design. As we look at the human body and talk about these things, we're going to talk about a lot of things that are complex details. But you can look at a little baby, the birth of a child. That is a wonderful thing, just a marvel. And one of the things that I've been fascinated lately with is you look at a baby and you can tell they're dreaming. What does a baby dream about? What makes them smile? And you know, you look at their little tiny fingers and their little toes. Those things should cause us to marvel about how we have been made. And one reason I mention that is because David talks about in Psalm 139, verse 13, about God knowing him and forming him and knitting him together in the womb. And so I have been kind of curious, what did David look at and see and say, I am fearfully and wonderfully made? What observations did he note? This may sound silly, but I can remember when I was in college, one of the things that fascinated me was to look at your tendons as you move your fingers near your wrist. You can see this motion of the muscles and the tendons moving, or the back of your hand. How do those things work together and function? It's just a marvel to me to think about how we work, and we take it for granted so often about how our bodies operate. I'm going to try to give you a few examples or comparisons as we talk about the various parts of our body to try to compare to and to try to get us to appreciate how wonderfully we are made. The first part of our body I want to talk about is the nervous system. The nervous system kind of looks like tree roots in the body, just this vast network of nerves spanning out in our bodies. And basically, it is our wiring system. It is how the body controls and communicates. And so everything has to be regulated, turned on, turned off, told to produce more, told to stop producing, speed up, slow down. That's all being regulated and controlled, for the most part, without you ever having to even think about it. You don't have to think to tell your heart to keep beating. It just happens. And those signals that are being sent through our body, through the nerve system, travel at 450 feet per second. Now again, 5 foot, 6 foot tall, however tall you are, 450 feet per second. Those signals are flying through our body, communicating, regulating, directing our bodies to function. And you don't, again, think about that, but you think about your reflexes. The next time you're startled, somebody sneaks up behind you and scares you and gives you a jolt, how you can jump and react to those things so quickly. You don't think about it. It's just, it happens. It is a natural reflex. If you're hurt or scared, how quickly your body can just react to those things and kick in the adrenaline rush or things like that. If you've ever had a dog chase you, I know you're told not to run from a dog. But there are some times when a dog's after you, you know you've got to get away from that dog. The few times I've had that happen, you don't think about it. It's just next thing you know, you're on the other side of the fence, breathing very quickly. It's because your nerves have sent those signals and there's just been that response. Your body works so amazing in those ways. But think about it. If your nerve signals were too slow, if they didn't respond quick enough, you could be hurt or killed. If that dog comes at you barreling down, your body takes time to compute. All right, danger. I've got this dog coming. What do I do? You don't have time in certain situations to sit there and ponder things. I've been thinking about this more lately because if you got to do a virus scan on a computer, most virus scans bog your computer down. As impressed as we are with computers, as wonderful as they are nowadays, you get something like that and it just takes forever for that computer to do anything while that scan is taking place. Or if you've got a virus infecting your computer, and it just seems like it takes forever for that computer to respond. Well, again, think about the next time somebody yells fire and there's an emergency. If your body took that long to respond, to react, again, you could be in serious danger. And so sending signals is a crucial part to us functioning and living. If you put your hand on a hot surface and you start getting your hand burnt, well, what good is it if the signals run fast but they're sent to the wrong location? It tells your foot to move. It does you no good. You're getting burnt right there. The signals have to be sent not just quickly but to the right location. Again, I'm trying to emphasize how well our bodies function and work. We don't think about these things. We just take it for granted because it's always been like that. Well, how do these things develop slowly over time? For your welfare, your nervous system has to work, and it has to work quickly. It does not have time to develop over eons of years. One of the, I think, amazing examples of our body, and I've put it with the nervous system because it's a sensory component to us, is vision. When you think about the human eye, it is basically the camera of our body. I want to relay or compare this to some things. How many of you remember back when cameras had film? All right, you had to drive down to the store, drop it off, come back a few days later, pick it up, and I can always remember being excited. You get the pictures, you start flipping through them, and it's like one out of four or so is blurred, or it just wasn't a good shot. That's what cameras used to be like. You had that kind of difficulty. And so we are so spoiled with digital cameras, But even with digital cameras, yeah, you can see the picture right then, but there's still problems. There's still limitations. Write speed. How many pictures can you take per second? And it write it to the memory card. Well, it has a limited amount of speed. If you're willing to pay more money, you can get a higher speed. Capacity. Those little memory cards have gotten impressive about how much memory they can store, but they're still limited. And there are so many times I've tried to take pictures of my kid and been so frustrated because the thing can't focus. And I'm sure it's because I'm an amateur and nobody else has that problem. But I half the time I can't get the thing to focus, and by the time I do, the moment's gone. The child's doing something else. We don't take into consideration that our eyes are taking photos and feeding them into our mind, and we're seeing these things like that. It doesn't have to be sent off in 24-hour development later you can see. Your body is able to process these things in amazing quality. Cameras, photos used to be black and white. And then the big innovation was color photos. That's a wonder. We've been seeing in color for how long? So many things of our technology are just trying to imitate what the body can do naturally, what God created us to do. Going back to blurred images, a lot of times you have to have a little tripod. If you're going to take a good picture, you need a steady platform to take a picture, or it'll be shaky. Well, have you ever thought about how still do you stand? As I understand it, your eye muscles are twitchy. As they've examined the eyes, they've seen it, your eyes are twitchy. And yet the body is able to make adjustments for movement, you're running, you're walking, and still to be able to get a clear picture. Not shaky, not blurry, because you're constantly moving and bouncing around. I want to emphasize that because there's been times where we've taken home videos and you play it back on the TV and somebody was walking along doing this. And it's hard to watch because it is such a shaky video. Why do our bodies not do that? Why do they not have a problem with that? How wonderfully God made our bodies to be able to make adjustments, to be able to handle those kind of things. Adjusting to light. You don't think about how your eyes are adjusting to the different light until you go to the doctor and he dilates your eyes. Oh, that is painful. You come out and that sun is so bright, and yet your eyes are dilated. They're not responding naturally to focus down and prevent that much light from coming in. There are things like that about our vision that we just take for granted. We don't think about because they've just always been like that. But the eye is an amazing instrument that, again, modern cameras cannot even equal what God has created. With all our technology, it cannot match what our eyes are able to do. I want to give you an example of something that I think is a good example of what evolution cannot explain. From our brains, there are nerves. I counted, I think, 17 listed there, where that the nerves go directly from your brain to certain areas in usually your head or your neck. And they're called cranial nerve ports. And so basically, in the bottom of your skull, there's not just the hole for the spine to go down. There are these various nerves that are feeding out and going to these straight to these locations in your head and your neck. And it's, again, getting input about sensory, or it's controlling motor functions about our eyes, our ears, some various glands. It's an amazing kind of network. But why I think that it's important as an example of what evolution cannot explain is here you've got the skull being a bone that encases the brain. And it has to be tight so that it does not let cerebral fluid leak out. You don't want your brain fluid just leaking out. You need to maintain that kind of atmosphere, that environment around your brain. So how does several holes develop in the skull by random mutation at the same time that these nerves are extending off and growing from your brain to these locations? They're both happening by random chance mutation, but yet it's not allowing the liquid to leak out. There's not any kind of a problem like that. These are the kind of questions that you do not see evolutionists getting into. There is not a good answer that they have. Now, again, there might be an attempt that they've made, but a lot of times when you come across these kind of details, you can search the scientific literature and you don't find a lot of attempts even at trying to explain how these things could have gradually, over time, have developed without causing serious problems or death to the person. They don't have an explanation for things like this. It's because it's so complex, it's getting down into the details, the nuts and bolts of things. And again, we could talk about further things, but the automatic nature of our nervous system, where it controls all these organs, regulates them, controls them, it is just a marvel to think about. But when you look at the individual components of our body, the different systems of our body, we take for granted the natural function of our body until something happens. If you get a cold, then you finally realize how nice it is to be able to smell. Well, again, you've had it all that time, but you don't appreciate it until something changes. You get a broke arm, and all of a sudden you realize how nice it was to have two arms to do things. We take things for granted all the time about our bodies, about how God has made us. And yet when you look at the body, the systems of the body, each system is complicated enough as by itself. But when you consider that the body has to have each of these systems working fully, being fully developed for the whole body to be able to function, it's not just that your liver could develop on its own, and then slowly, sometime later, the body, you know, find that liver and absorb it into the body and use it to be a part of the body. The body depends upon these various systems to be working fully, properly already, or else there's death. I'll give you an example of this kind of interdependence. Some of us may have heard, I don't know how widely known this is, but going out in the sun is how your body usually produces vitamin D. You go out and your skin is exposed to the sunlight and your skin takes the ultraviolet rays and it uses that somehow to convert certain chemicals to make vitamin D. Well, then that vitamin D is transported by a transporter protein down to the small intestines. Well, where did that transporter protein come from? Well, the liver made it. Well, down after it's transported down to the small intestines, well, you don't really need it until you're eating something, so the small intestines store that vitamin D in an inactive form, waiting for the time when you're going to need it to eat. You know, you've eaten a meal and you need it now. Well, then the liver produces an enzyme that activates the vitamin D for when you need it. And the small intestines takes that vitamin D and it uses it, processed with the food, to make calcium. Well, then the calcium is taken and transported in the bloodstream down to your bones. And we all know your bones have to have calcium to be healthy, to be strong. And so the bones use that calcium to rebuild, to repair, to grow. Without calcium, how well do our bodies function? We start having bones break. We start having problems like that. But there are so many different organs and things that are involved in this long chain of events to make it where that our bodies have the calcium that it needs. Again, that kind of complexity, that kind of inner workings of our body points to that this is a system that could not function with the liver only partially evolved or partially formed within us, partially operational. We have to have our body functioning as it is for us to be able to live. If there's something missing or lacking and it was just developing over time, we would be dead. Let's look at the circulatory system. nice picture of the veins and the arteries going through the body. The circulatory system, you've got blood as a living tissue. And the arteries take that blood from the lungs and small intestines to deliver oxygen and nutrients to the body. And then veins bring the blood back once they've delivered all that oxygen and nutrients. Well, have you ever thought about how your blood returns back through those veins coming up from your feet? How does blood flow against gravity? How does it get there against gravity? Well, partially, the pumping of the heart does have the pressure that kind of helps push it along a little bit. But there's more to it than just that. Within your veins, there are these valves that are apparently about every half inch. And these valves are one-way valves. They only allow fluid to pass one way, and then they close off to prevent backflow. And so as the blood is being pumped up from your feet or wherever, it's slowly being closed off so that it doesn't go back. And so up, up, up it goes. And then the muscles also contribute. Basically, they massage or squeeze against the veins to kind of push, and up it goes. Well, again, how does this kind of thing develop? The arteries don't have those kind of valves in them. So how does it randomly, by chance, just happen to be that the veins get it? Those kind of details, again, evolution cannot explain. We're warm-blooded. You don't really, again, think about that. You see turtles or reptiles sitting out bathing in the sun. And these cold-blooded animals, they love the sunshine because it helps warm them up. They cannot warm themselves up. They can't regulate their own temperature. Well, again, that's one of those kind of questions. I don't know of any kind of good answer that evolution gives about how does an animal change from it having cold blood to warm-blooded. We have to maintain a certain temperature. 96 point whatever it is. 98.6, I can't remember the exact one. It seems like it's so different sometimes with folks. But you get up to 108, 105. And we know that's dangerous. You can start losing brain cells, it burning up the body. Well, our bodies have to keep a certain temperature. It's not just any warmth. If you go too low, like hypothermia, you die. Again, the body has to maintain a certain kind of environment for a normal operation for us to function and be well. How did that develop? Red blood cells are a part of our blood. They're the part that carries the oxygen through our body. Red blood cells live about 120 days, and so they're constantly being produced, new replacements. And again, they're not reproducing themselves. They don't have a nucleus, apparently. They have to be produced in the bones and the bone marrow. Again, there's an interrelation in the level of complexity there. Old red blood cells have to be identified and removed. Well, that sounds pretty simple. You just look for the aged red blood cell that's got a cane and walk it along. How does that happen? Apparently, I think this is fascinating for some reason, but apparently there is a slight change in the structure of a red blood cell when it reaches old age. And that slight change in its structure allows it to be identified by basically cells that are produced to attack these old red blood cells. And so these cells are produced, and they come out there and they look and identify, and they devour, eat these old red blood cells up, recycle them, so the parts and the nutrients can be used by our body. Think about how wrong that can go. What if those cells just decided to just start attacking whatever cells in our body? There are such things as autoimmune deficiencies where that our body is basically attacking itself. Getting close, what I'm emphasizing is getting close is not good enough. These cells have to be able to function properly, or they'll start attacking the body, start attacking our own body and killing our own body. It's something that can go horribly wrong. The body has to have within the blood a filtration system to clean out the old cells, to purge the waste from the organs, to maintain salt levels, water content, pH level. It is such a fine tuning. If you've ever had blood work, they come back and they tell you a whole list of things that they've looked at. It is amazing the kind of things that our body is just normally controlling and maintaining about our blood. But how long do you live without your kidneys? If your kidneys stop working, how long does it take? Days, weeks, before you die, if you don't have dialysis? Your bodies cannot function without those organs. You have to have them working properly before you can actually live and have a healthy life. And so again, there is that example of how it just can't wait for these things to develop over eons of years. And the levels in which we have to maintain, I think, are impressive. The pH level is talking about how acidic or basic your blood is. If it goes from 7.4 is the target, if it goes down to 7 or below, you could have death. Or if you go up to 7.6 or higher, you could have death. You've got to maintain a pretty accurate, specific pH in your blood. This is why when you go to a hospital and they do blood work, they're looking for all these kind of things in your blood, making sure that the balance, that it's all right, that there's no indications that something is off, that your system is having problems or needs some kind of extra attention. They can tell so much about your body by the chemistry, how your blood is doing. This is also why when you go in for operations, they give you fluids. Well, they don't just say, hey, you're about to have an operation, you'll lose some blood, so you need some fluids, so drink this Gatorade, or we're going to inject this Gatorade into your bloodstream. You just need some fluids. IV fluids are carefully manufactured substances. They are a carefully crafted fluid, again, to help us maintain a certain level of chemicals and substance within our bodies. And at the middle of the center of our circulatory system is our heart. The heart, to me, is such an amazing thing. You've got this pump within your body that is just chugging along. And it lasts for 70 to 80 years. Think about that. I can remember my parents talking about them having a washer that lasted, or maybe it was a dryer, that lasted 23 years. That was impressive. Nowadays, how long does an appliance last? You're doing good to get 10, 12 years. But this pump is just chugging along for 70 to 80 years, pumping, and just keeps on going. The next time you have an appliance break or a part on your car break, think about this. Think about how well designed your body is. The heart pumps about 1,800 gallons of blood per day. To me, that kind of number doesn't ring a bell. I mean, 1,800, what is that? If you go home, your bathtub usually holds about, on average, 50 gallons of water. So take your bathtub, turn on the spigot, fill it up, drain it, repeat that, and do that for 33 times. That's how much blood we're talking about the heart pumping each day. That is an amazing amount of fluid going through this organ on our body. It contracts some 100,000 times each day. That's 70 to 80 times per minute, or more than double if you're exercising. To try to help you get your mind around that continuous motion, if you make a fist and you clench it once each second, and you just do that as long as you can do it, I mean, just keep on clenching until you get so tired you can't keep on doing it, your heart keeps on going. You can get tired and your muscles get tired, but your heart just keeps on chugging along every day doing that regimen. That is so impressive to me. And again, we don't take it, think about that. We take it for granted. Another thing about our blood is blood clotting. When our system springs a leak, what stops us from bleeding out? And I'm not saying this to be gross or anything. I hope nobody's squeamish here. But, I mean, I don't care how small the cut is. You can have a little small paper cut. What stops the blood from just gushing out? If you were to go up to a tanker truck, one of those tanker trucks going down the interstate, and you took a hammer and you drove a nail into it, it'd empty out. There's nothing in that truck that's going to stop the fluid from coming out. Now, it might come out slowly if it's syrup versus water, but it's all going to come out because there's a hole. Well, why do our bodies, when it gets a hole in it, not lose everything? Lose all that blood in our body? It's because there is a process, a complex process in our bodies to help stop the blood from oozing out and us dying. The body has to signal that there is a cut present. And then it initiates this chemical process, and I'm not going to go into it because it's well beyond me. But this long chain of a chemical process takes place to say, look, there's a cut, and then it starts to seal it up. Well, that process has to take place at the right location. Again, if you get a cut on your finger and it starts a blood clot over in your ribs, that ain't going to help you. How dangerous is it to have blood clots loose and floating around in the body? It can cause death if it goes to vital organs. Blood clotting has to happen at the location where the cut is for it to be helpful. And the process has to have all the necessary tools to work. Hemophilia. Again, some of this stuff I'm limited on my knowledge of. But basically, there is something missing to signal, to initiate the process for something called fibrin to come. And fibrin basically helps plug the gap so that then the cells can start forming and plug it up. And so apparently somebody with hemophilia, it's not that they don't have a scab form. It's that the fibers there to plug it up and cause it to where that it can sew that hole up don't happen. And so the person can bleed for days on something so simple as a paper cut. We don't think about these things. It just happens. God made our body so wonderfully that when something happens, hey, my body healed itself. It took care of that in a couple of weeks, back to good as new. You don't stop and think about these things. Again, the process has to stop. It's not good enough just to get it started. It has to signal, hey, okay, boys, stop. We've got the hole plugged. If it didn't stop, think about how bad that would be. You'd be like a car with no brakes. You got going, you got started, but then you had no brakes. There's going to be an accident, crash, something bad, damage. That blood clotting has to stop at the right time, too. This is an impressive process, chemical process that takes place in our bodies. One of the objections or ridicules that I think evolutionists make is that they will point to defects. And they'll say, well, the eye, yeah, it's pretty good, but it could be better. It wasn't designed all that well. And, you know, had this person really known what they were doing, they would have done this. It seems like evolutionists will point to things and say, see, we've got illness, or we've got something that doesn't function right, some kind of disease. And so, therefore, because it's not made perfect, there must not be a designer, must not be a creator. Because why else would he make these defects? Why would he not make our bodies function just perfectly? One of the things I think about when somebody says that, what kind of people would we be if we didn't have illness? If our bodies didn't have sickness or something break every now and then? We'd be arrogant. I know we're, as a society, pretty arrogant as it is, but I mean, you think about youthful people, usually don't think anything could happen. They'd never die because you've got that youthful vigor and the energy and you can just do anything. But as you get older and you start having your back hurt and, you know, different things happen, you realize, I'm not going to last forever. I'm not going to live forever. You start thinking about those kind of things. I will, again, wonder about the value of these kind of things, where that God made us like he did wonderfully, but some of those things are a good reminder to bring us back down to size. But also, when man says these are defects, well, some of this kind of things make me wonder, well, okay, since you know so much better, you do it better. You make it better. If you say, well, why didn't he do this? Why didn't he make it this way? This would have been a better design. All right, have at it. You think about artificial parts to replace our natural body. Synthetic blood. You ever heard of such a thing? I mean, we make it for oil and put in the cars. Synthetic. It's great. It lasts twice as long. Well, why don't we make synthetic blood? We can make it better. It's not that simple. This is a complex part of our body. And man just can't click his fingers with all our technology and say, I'm going to reproduce this and imitate it and make something better. Your eyes or your heart, again, man's not been able to replicate these things, to make something that functions even slightly as well. One of the books I was reading, the guy talked about artificial hearts. And it was horrible. It was sad because they dumped millions and millions of dollars in this program, and they got these devices that would last maybe 100-150 days, and the person died. Man cannot even come close to imitating the natural way our bodies function. Prosthetic limbs. Again, you take it for granted. Next time you go home, you take that doorknob and you turn it. How difficult that is for somebody with a prosthetic limb. That is something we don't even think about. We just go home and we turn it and push and it's open. But your bodies function so wonderfully and marvelously. There was a video I saw the other day about a competition of among universities, and I'm guessing it was some engineers, but they were making these robots to be able to stand and walk and go up and turn the door. And the challenge was to make it walk over sandy surfaces or uneven surfaces, to step down steps. Brethren, we do not even think about that kind of stuff, but you see a video like that, where that the smartest students out there with the professors helping cannot make a robot that can just simply walk across some surface, step down, turn a knob. That's why you got pictures of the Mars Land Rover or whatever that thing's called, Range Rover. It's not a robot with legs. They can't make it where that the thing can just stroll across the surface of that planet. It has to be a different design because man cannot imitate those kind of things. Jumping, running are tremendously difficult for people with prosthetic limbs. It's because we are so wonderfully made. Artificial intelligence, again, has been one of those things that countless movies have portrayed. It's pie in the sky. Man cannot make a machine do what we do. Think like we do. Have imagination, dreams, hopes, personality like we have. It will never happen. I don't care how smart the people are. They're not going to make a machine with artificial intelligence because we are so unique. Very quickly, we don't have time to talk about all these things, but you look at the brain, the ability to compute, imagine, create, or remember. Amazing. There is, psychology, this whole study of just why we do things the way we do and think the way we think and behave the way we behave. But also there's a side to us about our conscience. Where did our conscience come from? That little voice in the back of our head saying, I really shouldn't do this. I shouldn't go there. Where did that come from? Evolution cannot account for our conscience, that God built within us a moral standard to some degree. Now, again, your conscience can be trained wrong. It can be where that you're hardened to where you're calloused and you don't feel and react the way you should. But you look throughout the world and people have this sense of ought. Well, he ought not to take that. That's not right. Where'd that come from? It means that there's something unique about us. Our self-awareness, whether we have goals, individuality, personality. Again, our intricacies about us that make us wonderfully made. Our awareness of mortality. To me, this kind of sounds a little strange at first, but you look at animals, and animals don't sit around really paying attention to time. I got to be somewhere in 5 minutes. I got to go. Animals, for the most part, just lay around, and whenever their tummy gurgles and rumbles, they go and look for something to eat. There is not a sense of any kind of notion about time. I've got something to do. I'm in a hurry. I've got to get these things done. I've got these goals. I've got these plans. And they don't really think about, I'm about to die. That what will happen to me? What will happen to my children when I'm gone? This sense of knowing that they will one day die and need to plan accordingly. Animals don't think about that. We are so unique in that way. It's just, again, another aspect about us that makes us very fascinating and different from anything else that's been created. Our ability to speak is a uniquely human trait. Well, why? Why do other animals not talk? Now, again, you've seen videos of parrots, imitating and those kind of things. But they're not communicating. They're not having a conversation that's original. They've been trained. Polly, you want a cracker? Yes. They're just imitating. They're just being trained to do these things. But to actually speak, again, this is a side note I think is really fascinating, but those times where the scientists have trained the chimps to sign language, and they say they can speak 300 words or whatever. Well, if the chimp thinks it's so wonderful, why doesn't it teach its children? The chimp has no concept about these things. It is doing these things simply because it knows it can get a treat. It's doing these things because it knows it gets certain things that it wants. But it is not thinking about these things to any kind of extent past maybe what a 2-year-old can do. A 2-year-old can communicate the same way as that chimp. Those kind of things make us so unique that God gave us the ability to be able to express ourselves, to form bonds with each other by the way that we talk. Again, those things to me are so amazing, and it's not easily to be able to explain the origin of language. Evolution cannot explain these kind of things. To wrap things up, I want to say that we need to count our blessings and stand in awe of what God has given us. He has made you very wonderfully. Hearing, walking, smelling, seeing, feeling, thinking. You notice that David also said that we were fearfully made. To me, that's even a more interesting concept to think about. Because, again, I can see people saying, just naturally, looking at ourselves, looking at the world around us and saying, God made a wonderful place and He did wonderful things. But the fearful part, how does that enter into the picture? Well, I believe it's because if you look at these things and you see a God who has had the power and the wisdom to fashion all these things, to sustain it by His power, and to speak all these things into existence, and to know that that is a God that we will one day have to answer to. That's why it's a fearful thing. Because we are so wonderfully made, and to know, if God can do this, what else can God do? On the day of judgment, we're going to stand before God, and we're going to be laid bare. Hebrews 4, 11 through, I think, 15 tells us that. That the Word of God is piercing. It searches even our thoughts. And that everything is going to be laid bare before God. There is not going to be any hiding from God. There's not going to be any deceiving of God. When we stand before God, we will give an account for ourselves. How we have lived, our decisions in this life, whether we have chosen to be faithful to Him. I want to encourage you, as we have talked about these things, to stand in awe of what God has given you, to be thankful for it, but to also know that whether you're youthful and you have a lot of energy, or whether you're older and maybe you just want to take it easy, God is watching what we're doing in our lives. And we will have to give an account for what we've done. If you're here tonight and there's something that you need to make right, or there's changes that you need to make in your life to turn your life around and to become what God wants you to be, then I want to invite you to come forward while we stand and sing.
See you.